Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Monday, August 3rd, 2009. I'm Sam Minter. As usual, Yvonne Bo is here. Hello, Yvonne.
Buongiorno.
Can you believe it's already August?
It's almost 2010.
That's even more scary.
I mean, think about it, we watched a movie 2001, a long time ago.
And the movie 2010.
And then they even came out with 2010 later. And, you're thinking, I remember when I watched 2010 for the first time, which I did not watch in the theater. I watched it at home on HBO, 84, 85 or something. And that seemed like such a long time ago. Unfortunately, the only thing is that we have not traveled to Jupiter.
That's right.
Been kind of really interesting, to be quite honest.
At least not with human beings.
At least not with human beings.
Remember sitting in my backyard with some of my friends when I had to have been like 8 or 9 years old, figuring out how old I'd be in the year 2000.
In the year 2000.
And that was like almost 10 years ago now.
That's right.
And I remember, I'll be 29. Oh my God, that's so old.
Right. Yeah. So it's all just scrolled by, relatively quickly,
And we still have none of the things they promised us. No flying cars, no jetpacks, none of the stuff.
Some things.
That's true. We've got a lot of things that nobody was even talking about. I mean,
that's right.
And we have mentioned a couple episodes ago, you mentioned the list of technology or whatever it was. But I mean, fundamentally, if you look back and compare life as it was in 1980 or so, let's say, to life now, almost 30 years later, there's so much that is so completely and totally different due to the change in technology.
Absolutely. I mean, in so many ways. I mean, it's just unbelievable. It's like, just think about usually traveling, going from point A to point B. It used to be that you'd have to pull out one of these book maps and, you'd look up the index of the street address you were going to, and you would triangulate in the map where you were going, and then you had to look through it, and,
boop, boop, boop on your GPS, and you're there.
Or even if you don't have a GPS, I'll just bring you out map in 2 seconds. Boom, boom, boom. Here, there you go. Go ahead. You'll get there.
Yeah, I mean, there used to be this whole triptych service from AAA when you were going on, a cross-country drive or something.
Oh, yes, I forgot about that, yes.
Where you would tell them, I'm going from Miami to Seattle, let's say, and they would generate a whole series of maps for you with, little notations on hotels to stay along the way and how far you could get each day and all this kind of stuff. And it would come to you in this little packet that you would take with you and use, of course, if you went off route in the middle, then you're screwed. But, I don't know. Simple acts like watching TV are fundamentally different than they used to be or can be. They're not for everybody, but I mean, you add a DVR, you add a whole bunch of channels, you add HD, you blah, 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 blah.
The fact that we're doing this podcast in and of itself, I mean, if you think about that, I mean, when we first did our show, how many years ago already? You gotta remember the technology that we used in order to make the show. My God, compared to how we could produce this show right now. I mean, what a change that is. So, we've had a significant number of things. I mean, I think that in certain things, obviously, we thought, space travel and those things would be, commonplace, but, those things didn't happen. But certainly a number of other things that weren't there certainly happened.
Just methods of communication, ability of individuals to, do the kind of publishing that only large companies could dream of in the past. Yep. You know, basically anything with regard to the internet, digital distribution of content, you know, all of this stuff. I mean, I mentioned like changes for television with HD and stuff, but I mean, the biggest change, which is still underway, is, and most people aren't there yet, but I mean, at this point, I'd say a significant portion of what I end up watching, I'm getting off the internet, not off my DirecTV. You know, and I think that's, it's inevitably moving in that direction, although it's not fully mainstream yet. But
I don't know. I watch most of the stuff that I watch. I watch some stuff on the internet, but to be quite honest with you, I still watch most of the stuff that I watch is off of our.
I know. I'm saying it's. This is not a change that's mainstream yet, but I think give it another 5 to 10 years, it will be.
I'll see certain things intermixed. Then I'll tell you why. You know, I have an Apple TV, for example.
Oh, you actually got one of those things. Okay, go ahead.
Yes, I've had one for, I guess, I don't know, a year or so, or more, I guess. I can't even remember now. Although for renting movies, it's really nice. I must admit that sometimes I'm sitting there and I'm scrolling through movies that are available to watch, and I could never pick one.
Whereas if you're flipping through the channels and you happen to see like one that's halfway through, you'll sit there and watch the rest.
Yes. Yes.
No, I understand that completely. But you know, I don't know. My TV watching habits have changed dramatically. It just in the last couple of years, actually. You know, I mean, first of all, once I got the Sling boxes, almost all of my TV watching moved onto my computer screen. I almost never went to the actual thing anymore, even within the same house. Like, and all of our, you know, I have a projector, and we used to have a couple TVs set up in different parts of the house, but there aren't any anymore. Like, we just, it's not even set up anymore. They're like in the garage. You know, so we have the projector and we have our Sling boxes, and we watch almost all of the television we watch on the, you know, on the TV, I mean, on the computer via the Sling box, except when we like all want to get together and watch something big, and then we put it on the projector. But especially in the last year, the amount I've watched has plummeted. I just have not had time for anything. So I used to follow a whole bunch of shows, and I had like my TiVo set up for season passes for them. And I'd make sure every day I was watching like a couple hours of stuff, and I'd, you know, catch up on my stuff on my TiVo over the weekend or whatever. Now I'd say there's maybe 2 or 3 shows that I even bother with anymore.
So why? What has precipitated that change?
I've just been spending my time in other ways, I guess. I mean, and
okay. So what are you doing in your activities right now?
Well, not even anything fun. I suppose fun. I don't know. I mean, I'll be doing stuff with the family, or I'll be sitting down on the computer reading. Google Reader RSS feeds from various places, or I'll be doing whatever. And I used to always have like the television on in the background while I did that kind of stuff. Yeah. I usually don't anymore. Now, like I'll have podcasts on in the background or music or whatever, and I'm just not watching the TV anymore. I still am watching it. Like recently, just in the last couple months, we started watching Jeopardy again. You know.
Okay.
And so that's on TV, and that's on DirecTV, and I'm sure there's probably a way to get it online, but I haven't bothered to find it. You know, but like the episodic shows, you know, it's just I'm watching less of them than I used to, and part of it is just like, you know, I can't, like, I'm not going to dedicate, you know, 5 or 6 hours a week to watching shows that it, on a regular basis. You know, the 2 or 3 shows that I like the best, sure, I'll do that for them. But I'm not going to, on a regular basis, be watching shows all the time. I just, you know.
You found other ways to spend your time.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, I can't find my, and I guess maybe part of this is that I have, the last few years I've had a desktop instead of a laptop. If I had a laptop, maybe I'd be sitting in front of a TV more often.
Because I do that. I got to admit that
But even here, I mean, I've got a separate screen to run my Slingbox off. I actually did hook up one of the old televisions, is now acting as a second monitor for my computer. And pretty much it's really low resolution, so you would never use it for anything real. But I do two things with it. There are two things that ever go on that monitor. One is iTunes, and the other is the Slingbox. So, you know, I just put the Slingbox into that window and open it up, and it acts just like a regular television at that point. But I've found myself doing that less and less. And I know it's the summer season right now, so even the shows I did watch are like on vacation right now or whatever. So maybe that's part of it. But I think there's been a dramatic decline. Like, if you looked at me 6 years ago, let's say, I would get home from work, I would flip on the TV, you know, and I'd have the TiVo loaded full of crap, and I'd constantly be watching something off the TiVo all the time. You know, now I sit down and do that maybe once a week for a couple hours, but not like hours a day, which is what I used to do. Now I'll come home, and if I have time to even get to my computer at all, because I'm not doing running around doing errands or running, you know, I'll put on iTunes and I'll hit play on my random shuffle that includes podcasts as well as music. And you know, I'll just do whatever I'm doing while that's going. And I hardly ever flip on the Slingbox anymore unless there's some particular show I'm looking for.
I think that what would have, you know, you've had a significant change in your life in terms of family, et cetera.
True.
And, like, you live by yourself versus, you know, having
But even then, like, I'd say as a family, like, even 2 years ago, we watched more than we do now. Or together, I should say. Now, I should say, you know, Brandy and Amy are still watching lots of TV. They have got a lot more free time than I do. But okay. They're watching a variety of different things now. Brandy, I know most of the stuff she watches is now online too. You know, she's either watching it on, you know, she's, you know, watching on streaming Netflix or Hulu or the various networks, individual websites, or for the things that aren't available there, don't tell anybody, torrents, you know. And yeah, some stuff off the TiVo too, but less than before, for sure.
Well, I mean, I must admit that, you know, I have a substantially large, high definition TV hooked up to DirecTV with a high definition DVR, and you know, I also do subscribe to every channel on DirecTV too, which probably the variety of programming. I know it gets expensive, to do that, but. But, you know, I like movies. I like to watch movies.
We exclusively do Netflix for movies.
You see, I can't do the Netflix thing. It's the same thing as what happens with me, the damn Apple TV.
You have to pick it.
I can't pick a damn thing.
I have a queue of like 300 plus movies that are basically anytime anybody has ever mentioned a movie.
Send me the damn DVDs. Listen, I'll get the damn DVDs and I'll be like, ugh. I don't really want to watch this right now.
Yeah, I see where you're coming from. I mean, like, on my hand...
you got to put a gun to my head to watch it.
So, in my case, like, you mentioned all the HD and everything. Like, if you'd asked me 3 years ago, I'd be like, you know, as soon as money allows it, I want to get a nice HD projector. I was researching them. I was picking out which ones I wanted, blah, blah, blah. I want to have a nice HD projector. I still like the projectors better than the standalone screens for a variety of reasons, but whatever. I was like, I want to get that. I want to get the HD tuner. I want to do this. I want to make sure I have the HD DVR, and I'm really pissed that DirecTV isn't doing that with TiVo, blah, 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 blah. Now I'm like, of all the things I could possibly spend money on, it's not even anywhere close to the top of the list. I'm happy with the SD satellite stuff we've got. I barely use it anyway. We were actually actively considering, we decided not to for the moment, but we actually talked about a couple months ago, should we just drop DirecTV entirely because we don't use it enough, and not replace it with anything either, just drop it. And we didn't. We decided to keep it for the time being. But I think that it's something that's changing over time, where even if you are going to display it on your big-ass HDTV, you're going to get it over the internet. You know, in a number of years. Let's continue, but we need to take a break. We will be right back after this.
You're in the Valley, AM 1620 and LiganAirRadio.com. This is where you'll find your favorite songs. Everybody's doing a brand new dance now. Come on,
baby. Let's do the twist. Well, they got a new dance and it goes like this.
I hit the radio dial and tune it up all the way.
I got a dancing in the moonlight.
Classic music for a classic American town. AM 1620. And in stereo at LiganAirRadio.com, the Valley.
Okay, we're back. So, Yvonne, you were saying?
Well, what I was just going to quickly mention is that a couple of years ago, I had moved to a rental place, like 4 years ago, and I spent a couple of months without any cable or anything. As a matter of fact, I did set up the TV, but with a couple of rabbit ears.
Right.
I must admit that I barely watched TV during those 2 months, and it really didn't, like, you know, I didn't really miss it that much.
Right.
I gotta admit that I wound up getting something, because I think my wife was the one that missed it, to be quite honest with you. I really realized that I could get along without it, and to be quite honest with you, I travel all the time. I barely watch any TV. I mean, the only thing I flip on when I get into the hotel is just put on the news, just to see, right, you know, what the heck is going on. Well, but other than that...
And that is still one of the final things that I've sort of still have TV for, is for that kind of breaking news stuff. But as we discussed a few weeks back when all the stuff was happening in Iran, it just wasn't doing it. And so, like, to me, that was like one of the last remaining reasons to have any sort of cable or satellite or whatever. And so that's partly what prompted the, do we really need this crap? Because, like, everything we do watch in terms of shows, you know, or not everything, but a lot of what we watch in terms of shows, we get online or through Netflix or whatever, you know, and news isn't particularly useful online and, you know, on the cable networks anymore. You can get better and more comprehensive stuff online. So why are we doing this? You know, and we still decided there were a number of reasons. There are still a few things we watched that were easier to do that way than otherwise, you know, and there's still some of the local news stuff is still better that way than online, although it's getting close. Yeah. So I don't know. We still have it for now, but it's teetering on the edge.
Okay. So, all right. So we beat that subject to death. So let me switch gears here a little bit. I had this little one tidbit that I had happen this weekend. Okay.
Okay.
I don't know if I mentioned that. I have a I did mention this a couple of months ago that I have a Samsung Epix. Okay, is my current telephone. Okay. It is. If it's not the latest and greatest, it's one of the latest and greatest. It's supposed to be one of the best phones Samsung provides as a Windows mobile device for messaging and so forth.
Ooh, is it? Okay, I think I know where you're going. Go ahead.
So I decided to search to see if there was a software update for the phone. Okay?
Yep.
So I go and I start going through the interwebs, you know, and punched in the model number to see if there was a software update, and voila, there was one. Okay, the software update for it apparently corrected a couple of the problems that I've been having with the phone. That I don't know if I mentioned. I've been having this problem that calls kept going to voicemail almost immediately. Like a lot of times.
Right, without giving you a chance to pick up.
Yeah, it wouldn't even give me a damn chance to pick up, just voicemail. And I'm like, fuck! You know, I'm like, you know, it's just ridiculous. I even called AT&T a couple of times, and I asked them, damn it, can't you extend the number of rings I get? And they tried, actually, but they couldn't get it, done. So, you know, this is really annoying. I mean, I'd be in a lot of times, and all of a sudden the phone would go, blip! And just, I couldn't get it. The other thing is that no matter how I set the ringtone, you could set it to an ascending ringtone or just for it to be loud on the first ring.
Uh-huh.
The phone had a bug that it would always do ascending. So that meant that, aside from the fact that it was going very quickly to voicemail, it was very faint at the beginning because it always went with an ascending ringtone. So it was just so the software update apparently corrected those things. So okay, so I go to I think I first find the link at AT&T. It sends you to a link at Samsung for product support. It says AT&T says we do not condone or support this blah 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 thing. Just go over there. So I get to this page of directions at Samsung for software update. I mean, my God! Listen, only a very technical person could do all the hoops that are in the directions in order to do software update. It took me north of 2 hours, okay, to update the damn software on the phone. I'm like thinking, I mean, is Samsung serious? I mean, this is the second or third largest cell phone manufacturer in the world, right? And, you know, they're trying supposedly to compete with Apple, okay, on this, right? And, you know, you want to – I did the iPhone 3.0 software update on my wife's phone, and it was just like, you know what? I plugged it in. It launched iTunes. Oh, there's a software update. Voila. Run it. Boom. It's there. I mean, it must have taken 10, 15 minutes.
No, and for the most part, you don't even have to think about it. Every time you plug it into sync/charge, once a week or whatever, it'll check for updates. And if there is one, it'll tell you. And
it'll tell you.
You click one more button and it updates it, you know?
Read some of this shit. I mean, I'm going to read you some of these directions because this is so complicated. Okay, I mean, let me put it to you this way. Here. The download process will erase all user data from your device. Please ensure that all critical information is backed up.
Yeah, that's always a plus to an upgrade.
Okay, okay, but it says here, update process interview, installation of ActiveSync version 4.5, installation of the Samsung modem drivers, verifying modem driver build, downloading the software update to the phone, verification of software. Now here's a part where it totally confused me. It says here, step one, download ActiveSync, which I never had because my phone, actually, I don't need ActiveSync on a computer to actually connect to Exchange, okay?
Okay.
It does it over the air. So, that's complicated. Okay, so it goes here, step two, install the Samsung motor drivers on the computer. Now, it goes to this thing where you install this driver, and then it tells you, okay, so you install it, right? Then it goes, step seven, the SGH-I907 USB connection must be changed from ActiveSync to modem. Step eight, on the phone, press start, settings, connections, USB connection mode. Step nine, use the navigation pad, change the selection from ActiveSync to modem, then select okay. Step 10, connect the Epix directly to the computer, okay? Step 11, follow the on-screen prompts if available, complete motor driver installation. Step 12. In addition to the Samsung mobile modem, the Samsung mobile modem diagnostic serial port and Samsung USB composite device drivers are automatically installed. Then you got to go to device manager. Okay? It says here, from the device manager, click the next to modems to verify that the modem is listed. Click next to ports. Then it click next to universal serial bus. Then step 3, verifying the modem driver build. It says to go into the device manager, click on the driver tab. The driver should read version 4.04, 4.70, whatever. After verification of the driver presence, step 4, back up the data, okay, which another list of things. Step 5, begin the software update process. Close all programs. Remove the SIM card. And I'm like, why? I got to remove the SIM card, so I have to go take the battery out, take the SIM card out. Then you download the software. Now, you download the software, and then it says it opens up a box with it asks for an ID and a key. And I'm like, why the hell do I have to enter like a user ID and password for a fucking software? But anyway, it gives you that. So then it says turn off the device, okay? Then connect the USB. Then turn on the device. Then you hit the start button. I'm still not even halfway through the directions, okay? All right? And I'm like going, you know, who the hell Oh, then you have to perform a full, even though you just installed the software, you need to perform a full reset, which the very easy way to do it is by typing *2767*3855#. Okay, which is obviously very intuitive. I mean, I'm sure everybody would have figured this out. And it, you know, and I was like, I mean, nobody is going to update their software with this unless you were really, you know, like me. I guess I was just desperate to try to see if it would work better. So, you know, I just do not understand how these companies think that they can get a good share of the fucking smartphone market when they're doing this shit. I mean, did they not try the other products first? Even a BlackBerry is a lot easier to update, for Pete's sake. I mean, I've done an update of a BlackBerry, and shit, I mean, it comes with software. It makes it a hell of a lot easier than this. I just could not believe that Samsung, you know, could be this bad. That's what I thought.
Now, you know, I obviously this is a combination. How much of this is directly Samsung, and how much is Microsoft, and how much is just, I don't know. Because I obviously parts of what you just read are directly Samsung.
Right.
But some of it is also related to the underlying Microsoft operating system being Windows Mobile or whatever.
Yes. Yes. But man, I mean, Jesus. I mean, you would think, okay, so you've got a lot of engineers at Samsung. Don't you think you could come up with a little script that would do all of
this?
Well,
no, I tell you, the problem is often when you've got too many engineers on something.
And
you know, because... I work with engineers all the time. I love engineers. They're great, you know, but there are things like it. You always say, for instance, you know, an engineer should never be the one designing a user interface, for instance.
Oh, yes.
You know, because
they should be told what to do, but not designing it.
Engineers think in a very different way than sort of your average non-engineer person, you know, and so there are things that do seem obvious and make sense, and they're like, what, this isn't clear?
I'm sure that you know, in this section, yeah, I mean, they thought that this is perfectly clear. I mean, what kind of moron, you know, could not execute this 100 steps, I think, that I counted in these instructions.
Well, you know, and it's sort of a matter of, you know, yeah, if it's pointed out to them, maybe they'll recognize it. But, and I'm being very general here, and of course, there are lots of engineers that don't think this way. So, you know, keep that in mind. But, you know, yeah, it's a matter of sometimes it doesn't even enter the heads of, you know, oh, yeah, what I'm saying is not intuitive to an end user, or is, you know, and I've had this situation, you know, at various jobs I've had in the past, where, you know, I've had engineers who are on my team, and one of our customers, one of our users has an issue, and, you know, they'll respond back to them, well, you know, just use the SQL code. And I'm like, okay, look. let's step back a second. Yeah.
SQL code, sure.
This is the same as going and asking you, Mr. Engineer Person, to, you know, go compose a sonata.
Exactly.
You know, that doesn't mean that they're stupid. And, you know, engineers telling me, well, but that, look, it's really simple SQL. All they have to do is go query the database for this, and they'll have their answer. Why are they asking me? And I'm like, well, it may be really simple to you.
You, but it's not to everybody else.
And you know, and it doesn't mean that this person is stupid. There are all kinds of components of their job that you wouldn't even comprehend, most likely. But they are experts in different areas than you are, and that's okay. And you have to keep this into account when you're responding to them. And you need to know your audience. And if you're responding to a highly technical developer, there's one set of things that you might answer to the thing, but answering the exact same question to someone, you know, who works in the merchandising department or in marketing, you're going to answer it a different way.
Right.
You know, and I think, and part of this, I think, applies to these kinds of things. Like, I think in the cell phone world, for the most part, pre-iPhone, there used to be an assumption that, first of all, most people who got their phones, it is whatever it is when you buy it from the store, and you're never going to upgrade anything. You're never going to do anything with it. And if you're one of those folks who got, like, the smartphone, then you're a fairly technical guy to begin with, because otherwise, why the fuck would you be getting one of these, like, complicated phones?
Now, a lot of people, they get them at a company or something. They're given this phone, obviously, and, you know, it's just they get this phone because work mandates it or something, and obviously, you know, they're never gonna do anything with it. I mean, they get it as is, and that's
and,
it.
And we got to take a break. We'll be right back after this.
This is the Curmudgeon's Corner Poem of the Week, brought to you by No-Tel Motel.
This is The Life by Kate Peebles. We're about to go all desperado and isolationist like Swiss bandits after a Coco pocket watch heist, landlocked peacefully in any case, 7 pounds of time and candy frowning in our squeezed palms. We are one day to another, goatish by the powder rooms, sweet-toothed lummoxes already spoiled by our yield. A foiled cuckoo stolen in Zurich makes its way to Milan via Alpine Express, nestled in the folds of ermine peltry. We write long letters to our mistresses in Harlem, who grow gaunt without our bonbons. But no, we gentlemen are mere figments. We lie. This faint a mumble, the lone scrawl of a Mount Blanc on blank bedding. No cherry whips tonight, no women or wit, a mere sleeper sick of one more sunk Adriatic night. How could we not persist?
For more like this, go to notelmotel.org with a new poet each week and a new poem every weekday.
Okay, we are back again. Anyway, I think you're right, Yvonne, that the world, of course, of these kinds of phones is changing. First of all, yes, lots of companies are assigning them to their employees now, and their IT departments don't necessarily take care of all that stuff for you. Plus, there are lots of people getting them that for their personal lives too now. I mean, and certainly you've got all the folks getting iPhones, which, you know, blows everything else out of the water right now. And, you know, you got a few people getting Pris and Android phones and stuff like that. But there are lots of people who just go into their, you know, phone store and are shopping around the cell phones and are like, oh, this one looks cool. And the expectation is not that this is something that you're going to have to babysit and worry about, you know, security updates and worry about upgrading it because it's buggy and this thing doesn't work and all that kind of stuff. But yet that's what you get in many of these cases. And I think part of that is just the industry somewhat lagging the actual use cases. Because again, you know, if you went back a few years, the people getting smartphones were all the geeks and only the geeks. But that's not true anymore.
I mean, and my phone had bugs. I mean, let's face it. I mean, this is the problem. I mean, the problem is that, you know, they make these phones using an operating system, and, you know, they have bugs. And, I mean, you would expect that they, at some point, that they need to update the software in order to fix some of those. And if you don't provide an easy way of doing that, then shit. I mean, you're really causing problems. To
well, and frankly, some of these updates at this point should be automatic and over the air. I mean, like,
exactly. For instance, why the hell,
yeah, the most recent example, just a couple days ago, as we record this, a security exploit was released that affects all sorts of phones, but in particular it affected the iPhone, where there was a way through a maliciously crafted text message someone could actually take over your phone.
Right. Right.
And it was described and demonstrated for the first time a few days ago, within 24 hours, although they should have done it earlier because apparently the black hats told Apple about it beforehand. But whatever. They released a software update that fixes this issue.
Right.
Now, this is the kind of update that would be ripe for over-the-air updating. You know,
right.
You're just using your phone. It says important security update. Click here to install. Boom, 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 done. You still have to install it over iTunes. As I said, iTunes by default will check for updates once a week if you sync your phone at home. And then we'll give you the option to update it. So, like, I haven't gotten mine yet. I haven't gotten my 301 yet. I know it's available, and I could click the button and get it. But I was just going to let the thing take care of it on itself, on its own. But, you know, it's an important security update. It's still going to take me a week. They should be updating that kind of stuff, you know, live over the air. Now, maybe giving you the option to reject the update if you really feel like it. But, you know. And we're comparing that even to... Yeah, that's still the easy iTunes experience. If this, like, for instance, there probably needs to be an update to resolve the same bug on your phone.
Sure.
That would require everybody, in order to be safe, to go through that 100-step process that you just described.
Exactly. And I'm like thinking, this is insane. Jesus. Okay. So moving on to other things. Let's see.
Other things? You mean there are things besides, you know, phones and television and things like that?
Yeah, I've heard of that. Yes.
Well, since we're going in sort of media directions, is on the music side, they're apparently trying to do these digital 45s or whatever to try to get people to not buy singles anymore and to go back to buying things more like albums. I think it's going to fail utterly.
How does that work?
So what they're basically doing is bundling several songs together in one price, like an album, but not as many as a full album, like two or three songs, plus multimedia content to go with it. So in addition to the three songs, you're going to get lyrics and liner notes and additional artwork, and maybe you'll get the video, and maybe you'll get like you do with a DVD, a sort of behind the scenes making of the song or whatever, and you'll get all this bundled together for, you know, a separate price that is presumably less than buying all the songs individually, but more than one or, you know, I don't know. I think it's an interesting idea, but I gotta think the vast majority of people are just gonna be like, you know, just give me the song.
Yes. Yeah, I think so too. I think that most people will be like, just give me the damn song.
You know, I mean, because I'll be honest, even like on DVDs and stuff, yeah, there's all kinds of bonus material in there. I'd say the percentage of the time I look at it is very small.
Yes.
You know,
yeah,
now,
I never look at that shit.
I mean, there certainly are like movie aficionados who will get their super special edition Lord of the Rings box set and watch all 500 hours of documentaries that go with it.
I don't watch it.
Yeah, like I will occasionally,
very rarely,
when I have finished a movie.
Very rarely.
And I'm bored and I don't want to go to sleep yet. I'll look and see what kind of special features are on the disc, and maybe I'll watch one or two of them.
Yeah, but that's not the norm.
Yeah,
so,
especially if there's like a bloopers or something, yeah, maybe I'll watch that because it'll be funny, you know?
If they put them into titles, I mean, you know, I'll watch it, you know?
Yeah, so anyway, music, and let's see, since we're talking phones, let's stay on this category for a bit. There was a whole kerfluffle about Google Voice being removed from iPhones.
Yes. Not removed, just that they didn't accept the application.
Well, no. The Google Voice applications had been accepted and were available in the App Store for months.
Oh, it was? I thought that the application
The official one from Google apparently had not yet, but the Google had made this available as a general API, so anybody could do apps like this. And there were a whole bunch of apps that were already in the App Store. Lots of people had bought them already, and Apple pulled all those apps and said to Google, "No, you can't do this." And so just to explain. Let's see, I'm not completely up on my facts here. Google Voice is basically a mechanism you can use. You'll get a separate phone number with Google Voice. People can call that. It'll do things like transcribe your voicemail. It'll do things like apply rules so that certain numbers will go straight to voicemail. Certain numbers will ring through. There's a bunch of other stuff it does. I'm not completely aware of all of them.
I'm actually looking it up right now. Okay.
But anyway, it adds a whole bunch of functionality, and Yvonne can run through it in a couple seconds when he looks it up. And, you know, basically, apparently this is another situation where AT&T said, please don't let this through. And Apple said, okay, we won't let this through. However, one interesting aspect of that is they're not letting it through anywhere. It's not like they're just not letting it through in the U.S. where AT&T is the carrier. They're not letting it through internationally either.
So that's here, the features of Google Voice. Okay, so one number for all your calls and SMS, call screening, announce the screen callers, listen in, listen before talking, taking a call.
They can be like leaving you a voicemail and you can be listening to it and then decide to pick up if you want to, just like old-fashioned answering machines.
I love this. Keep unwanted callers at bay. SMS, send, receive, and store. Place calls, call U.S. numbers for free. Taking calls, answer on any of your phones. Phone routing, phones ring based on who calls. Forwarding phones, add phones, and decide which ring. Voicemail transcripts, read what your voicemail says. Listen to voicemail. Well, that's obvious. Notifications, receive voicemail via email or SMS. Personalized greeting, vary greetings by caller. Well, that's cool. Share voicemail, forward or download voicemail. I guess my wife would love personalized greeting because I must admit that we've been getting calls, collection calls at home for somebody that is not at our phone number.
Right.
Okay. and a large amount of them. And my wife is getting really pissed off about this. We keep telling them they've got the wrong number.
Right.
But they keep fucking calling us, okay? And, you know, my wife, she would love to
do a personalized greeting for them, telling them to go fuck off.
Go fuck themselves. Do not ever call again, okay, or something. And which told the last person on the phone, which is just they woke her up the other day at 8 in the morning, and, you know, she thought maybe I was calling her, but because it came out as restricted, and sometimes when I'm calling out outside the U.S., it comes like that. She picks up the phone, there's this motherfucker trying to collect on somebody else, and she just blew up. She's like, you fucking asshole. Which fucking part of the voicemail message in this house don't you fucking understand? Don't ever fucking call this place again.
Yes. Anyway, I mean, the point here, it adds
conference
a whole
calling.
Yes.
It'll record calls.
Mm-hmm.
This is not bad. I like this.
Yeah. So Yvonne's gonna sign up for something this afternoon. But anyway, it adds a whole lot of features that are useful enhancements to the telephone experience for people who actually use the phone part of the iPhone a lot, you know, or other phones for that matter. It's not tied to the iPhone, but there's a native app that you would be able to get for the iPhone that makes all of these features a lot easier to use. And so anyway, apparently at AT&T's request, Apple's like, sorry, nope. Anybody who's already – all of the Google Voice apps that are already available, no longer available. And Google, by the way, please don't make one of these. We won't let it through. And apparently the FCC is actually even investigating this at this point to say, okay, wait, is there something, you know, anti-competitive going on here, or does this violate some rules? I have no idea if it violates any rules or not. But I will say, regardless of whether it violates any rules – regulations, laws, whatever, it's stupid. You know, this is the kind of thing that apps like this are what make a phone like the iPhone super valuable. And yes, you know, maybe it does compete with some of the built-in features. So what? This is what makes the fact that that you have a robust apps environment that can do all kinds of crazy things, you know, is what makes it valuable. And I can understand why AT&T is scared or whatever, because, hey, people get this and they don't use the minutes anymore. Well, you know, tough. You know, in the end, AT&T and all of you other cell carriers, you're going to end up being plain, flat-out data-carrying commodities. You know, get used to it. You know, but I don't know. I just think, and the same thing with a couple months back, they forced the Sling Player application to be Wi-Fi only instead of going over to the network,
right,
even though it goes over the network on every other phone on the AT&T network that it's available for. Yeah, there's a BlackBerry version, there's a Windows Mobile version, there's a Palm version. All of them go over the network.
The problem is that most, like 90%, 95% of browsing or activity, internet activity on the happens on the iPhone.
Well, absolutely, and this is the thing where these features have been available for other phones, but nobody fucking uses them.
Right.
Whereas, you know, what they find out is you make these features available on the iPhone, and hey, people use them.
Well, because it's a lot, they're a lot easier to use and install. That's what
Right. And you know, and you know, a number of people have pointed out why this is, you know, this is a prime reason why, you know, the whole jailbreaking thing for iPhones is still sort of quote unquote necessary, because there are all kinds of apps that for whatever reason Apple is deciding not to allow. And hey, you can still get them. You just have to break your phone first.
Right.
Jailbreak that, not actually like smash it with
a
hammer.
Not smash it into the ground.
But you know, and I'll be honest, I have not jailbroken my phone because so far I have not found something where that has been available jailbroken and not available legitimately that I really, really wanted. The closest I've come so far is the Sling Player stuff, because there are apps you can install with a jailbroken iPhone that will basically fool all the other apps into thinking they're on Wi-Fi when they're not. And so you could get the Sling Player app and then use it wherever you want it. But I still haven't done it because I don't want to mess with the hassle of an upgrade. It may or may not break. So as I was saying, this is a prime reason why people jailbreak their iPhones, because you can still get all kinds of additional apps that for whatever reason, Apple decides that they don't want to let on their phone. And, you know, Apple has good reasons. They don't want people to be putting out apps that like make your phone act unreliably, et cetera, be sluggish, whatever. But there's still all kinds of things out there. And you know, if Google Voice apps are one of them, that might be tempting. One of the only ones that has actually tempted me so far is one that lets you basically fake out all the other applications on your phone to think you're on Wi-Fi when you're not, so that you can run things like Sling Player and Skype and such that only that are set up to only work on Wi-Fi even when you're not. I don't know. There's I kind of wish Apple would open it up a little bit more, and even more, AT&T either has to get their act together and do this right, or they have to hurry up and get to the end of this exclusivity deal and go with someone that can.
Well, and I think that some people are mentioning that apparently the end of that exclusivity deal
next
may
year
be
sometime.
Yes.
And so, you know, there are a lot of people talking about, you know, hey, if starting in like let's say March 2010, you could get the iPhone on Verizon as well, let's say, who's got a reputation of having a much better network and much better customer service, much better everything. You know, how many people who just moved to AT&T for their iPhone would jump ship and go over to Verizon if that happened? And
I don't know if they're going to make a CDMA version of the iPhone. That's the question that I also have, because I haven't seen them release any version that is CDMA anywhere else in the world. I mean,
one of the answers to that question is apparently one of the things they're looking at is jumping ahead to 4G standards that will not necessarily have that same divide. So like even carriers that are on CDMA right now would spin up a new 4G standard that would potentially go across all of these. And so okay. that's one of the possibilities out there. I don't know what's going to happen, what's going to not. But I mean, even the CDMA thing, apparently, from what I've read in a couple places, I mean, you can get there are chips available that do all of the above, that basically you could swap out from the existing chip in the iPhone for an incremental cost of $5 to $10.
Oh, no, I believe it. I just haven't seen them actually, you know.
Well, you're not going to see it until they announce it. I mean, this is this is Apple we're talking about. They keep these things very close to the vest.
Well, I mean, but you got to remember, I mean, it's not like – well, it is true that the biggest CDMA markets are in the U.S. I mean, you know, worldwide. I mean, most of the rest of the world is pretty heavily tilted toward GSM, even though there are some countries that do have significant CDMA networks outside the U.S. But
okay, we got to take a break. We'll be right back.
This is a break, oh yes, this is a break. This is a break, cause no one gave me any suggestions. I told you, I warned you. So this is a break, this is a wonderful break, a wonderful break. Yes, indeed, this is a break. This is a break in the middle of Curmudge's Corner. Yes, this is a break. Yes, yes, this is a break, 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 break. Yes, 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 this is a break. Yes, this is a break, 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 break. Yes, it is a break. And now the break is over.
Okay, we're back for our last segment. So, Yvonne, do you want to make this all like an entire show, a tech show, or do you have any news or politics you want to talk about this time?
I don't know. Is there any politic news that you want to talk about?
Not really. I mean, we could update on the Gates thing, but
we haven't talked about tech intensively in a long time, so I don't know.
I'm okay with this. So while we're at it, Apple tablet rumors. Again,
well, I've been hearing all those Apple tablet rumors, but I'll believe it when I see it, I guess. Windows. I mean, I got to be quite honest with you. The last tablet computer I used, at first when I got it, it was gimmicky, and, you know, I used a little tablet a little bit at first.
And then you didn't.
And then I never used it again.
Well, see, now there are a couple things with this rumor. First of all, there have been Apple tablet rumors for, like, it seems like decades, you know. But apparently this time the rumors are a little bit more sourced, coming from manufacturers and component suppliers and stuff like that. So, and getting more specific, like there's some people even saying announced in September for availability before the holiday season. Some of the other rumors say, for instance, that this will not be a full-fledged Mac OS sort of laptop replacement tablet, but instead it's going to be more like a really fucking big iPod Touch.
iPod Touch? That's what I was going to say. Okay.
So it's going to be like a 10-inch iPod Touch. It is like what the last batch of rumors I've heard said.
What the hell did you do with that?
So like what they're talking about is it would have an app store instead of like, you know, go install whatever the hell you want. There would not be any physical keyboard, not a fold-out one, not whatever. It'd be touchscreen only. And that a lot of it would be tied into essentially being a big-ass portable media player. With once you have the app store, you also have games, you also have some productivity apps.
I guess the big thing is, you know,
you have web browsing.
Video watching, you know, thing.
Video watching, web browsing, email, basically all the things you do on an iPhone, but with a much bigger screen and like an iPod Touch, except instead of Wi-Fi only, the rumors are they would have, you know, a bundled data plan.
The one thing with that also is that it would also be, you know, if the screen is decently sized enough and the battery life good enough, it'd be a decent book reader, too.
That has also been talked about, whether this would be a Kindle killer or whatever. And some of the rumors around that have been that said, yes, Apple's definitely doing this. And then it was like, well, no, Apple would let you have an app for that, just like they do on the iPhone.
Right.
You know,
right.
But certainly, like, you know, Certainly there are people who read their books on the iPhone using one of the many ebook readers available for the iPhone.
And I must mention that they're insane.
I was going to say, I personally can't even imagine that. I love my iPhone. I use it for everything. But I can't imagine reading more than a few paragraphs at a time.
I agree.
You know, it's just not what it's for. Now, if you had a nice 10-inch screen where you could see a whole page and you click the button to flip the page, that's looking better.
Right.
I don't know. We shall see, I guess. But, you know, and another question is the price point, of course, and where that ends up. I mean, if they, you know...
Well, the problem is, you know, let me tell you something about the price point. It's problematic. I mean, some people are speculating that currently if you would take an iPhone and remove the carrier subsidy,
right,
it would be a $700 to $800 device.
Yes.
Okay.
It's about
right. I mean, if you think about it, you take it up and scale it up to that size, well, maybe, I don't know, maybe it would cost the same because the miniaturization down to iPhone size certainly adds cost.
Well, I mean, I've seen speculation of around an $800 price point for this kind of tablet. Now, who knows if they're right? But again, when you get to that price, you start thinking, well, why wouldn't I just get a regular laptop
or a
MacBook or whatever?
Right.
And it's a strong argument. I mean, it's like, what are you? I mean, if it ends up costing almost the same as a MacBook, why wouldn't you get a MacBook?
Why the fuck would I just buy a fucking MacBook?
And the answer has to be around some kind of differentiation in what kinds of things you can do with it and how easily. Like, there are downsides to having a full laptop. Like, you can imagine, you know, being, on a train or something, or a bus commuting, doing something with your tablet, you know, and just sort of holding it and doing whatever. If you're or walking down the street, you could be doing something on your tablet. You're not going to be walking down the street with your laptop open doing something.
Yes.
I mean, sure. I have seen people doing that, but they're really strange.
Yes.
You know, for the most part, with a laptop, you want to find some place to sit down. You're going to go to your Starbucks or whatever. You're going to open up the laptop. You'll do something, but you're not going to use it while you're mobile.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas maybe you would with a tablet like this. I don't know.
Maybe.
But it is tricky. And on the other hand, you know, if it is sort of limited, sort of like a big iPod Touch, well, then it's not going to be for you if you want sort of to be able to do everything that you do with a laptop. However,
because I think if you're spending that kind of money, you might want to be able to do more stuff than just that.
And meanwhile, but on the other hand, most people at this point, 95% of what they do on is surf the web or maybe email. And and frankly, half the time, email is via the web now anyway, through places like Gmail. So you could do all that. If you had a really nice tablet that was really good at surfing the web, had a nice high-speed data connection, that's got a lot of utility in and of itself. The question is, again, how does it compete with all the other offerings? And you're certainly going to get a wow factor if it's really cool, and it'll always be really cool coming from Apple almost. But, you know, there's some of these things that Apple comes out with that, you know, have a real splash at first and then just don't catch on. And, you know, I'm just not sure if a tablet's going to catch. I mean, if anybody's going to get it right, it's probably going to be Apple. I'll give them that.
But you know, we'll see. I don't know, because tablets have not been exactly, you know, I mean, there's been tablet computers around for a long time, I mean, but nothing that really, you know.
Aside from very niche applications, like, you know, nurses using them, you know, as they go through the hospital or whatever, they, for the most part, have not caught on in a wide stream sort of way.
No, not at all.
So the one more Apple thing as we close out our tech show is, I'll notice sometime in the last week or so, the stat came out that while, you know, Apple has been, you know, around 10% of market share in general for a long time, if you look only at high-end machines, and I believe that was marked as over $2,000.
Yeah.
91% of the market is Apple, is Mac.
I believe.
Yeah, which is basically saying, and you know, anyone paying attention has sort of noticed this on a mindshare type of way. You know, the folks who are willing and able to put a lot of money into their computers, who are really watching things carefully and want to have the best they can get, they're buying Macs.
Yes.
You know, meanwhile, on the flip side of that, if you're looking for a $500 computer, there ain't no Mac for you.
No.
I mean, maybe the Mini, but not really.
I don't know. I got my niece with a Mini. You know, it actually works.
No, it's not a bad machine, but it has not, like, you know, burned up the shelves.
No, but it is a pretty good machine. I mean, I really, you know, I don't see why. I guess Apple's not pushing it a lot either. I must admit.
That's
but,
true.
Know, that you would expect, you know, some.
Well,
like,
you know, they were when it first came out. It was like the switcher machine,
it's available. If you go to the website, you can get it, but you know, it's not like they're.
Well, they haven't updated it in a while, and
I mean, they updated the processors and the hard drives. I mean, it's got more capacity. It's got faster processors and stuff like that than it had the original. I mean,
it's been a while for that. Yeah, they haven't done anything substantial to it. It hasn't gotten the attention that their other lines get. But at first it was marketed as the switcher's machine. And I have no stats on this, but from sort of anecdotal evidence, I know a bunch of people who, you know, were Windows or Linux or whatever, and were like, hey, I'll take advantage of this opportunity to try a Mac and see what it's like. And many of them switched and did not go back. Right. You know, so, you know, I don't know how well that worked, but, you know, it certainly isn't something where they've been focusing their attention. Apple has almost exclusively, with a couple of exceptions like that, made a conscious decision to not compete in the low end.
Yes. Not competing the low end. I mean,
right. Mid to high. Yes. And right. That includes mid range, but, they don't even go to the low end, and people keep saying they should, but so far they've said, you know, no, we're the premium brand.
I think that, you know, and that strategy so far has proved successful. I mean, I think the market's big enough that obviously it's like, if you stay in the high end, there is enough out there that you could make quite a lot of money. I mean, this is not a small market.
Even years ago, when Apple's success wasn't quite what it is today, you know, lots of people were, you know, banging on Apple and saying, you know, you're down to 5% or whatever, and you know, you suck, and Windows has got 95%, and you know, this is hopeless, and you know, Apple's like, you know, we don't necessarily want to compete in that world. You know, we're the high end. We're the BMW or Lexus. We're not the Honda Civic, you know.
And maybe 20 years ago, when, you know, applications were so, I mean, let's face it, Apple's, you know, 20 years ago, the original Apple succeeded because Apple also developed a lot of core applications internally. It got into the early 90s when all of a sudden, you know, they weren't developing as many applications as they should and moving ahead, and they were far more dependent on developers, and developers all of a sudden said, well, shit, why am I going to write applications for this? Is that, you know, when I've got such a larger market share out there, Windows, and that was an issue back then. But the truth of the matter is right now with the internet, you know, it doesn't really matter. I mean, it really has made that really irrelevant.
Right.
So, you know. I'm looking at right now the current Mini. The current Mini right now for $799 is it's the fully equipped 320 gigabyte hard drive with a 2 gigahertz Intel Core 2 Duo, okay, and 2 gigabytes of memory, okay, and 8x super drive, you know, NVIDIA graphics. So, you know, it's not, you know, it certainly has got the latest Intel processor in there that you can, you know, the latest that you can get, and a decently sized hard drive. Considering the small form factor,
I just to finish that up, I'm checking out the Mac Mini upgrade cycle on MacRumors.com. It's buyersguide.macrumors.com, which sort of tells you when everything has last been updated. On average, they've only updated the Mac Mini once every 252 days.
Okay.
Which actually isn't that bad compared to the iMac is averages 220 days between updates.
There you go.
So, and they updated the Mini, they last updated it on March 3rd of this year, the same time they updated the iMac. So, you know, that's not horrible. That's not horrible.
No, it's not that bad. I just think that they haven't been pushing it a lot out there, but, you know, it's there. It's, I mean, it's updated. You know, if you grab one right now, you're not getting some out-of-date clunker. That's for sure. So,
no, you know. you're getting a nice little Mac as long as you're not going to push the machine too hard. If you're using it for web surfing and mail and iTunes and all that kind of stuff, you'll probably be very happy, assuming you already have a screen and a keyboard and a mouse.
Yes. You know, the one thing I've noticed right now is I will tell you this. I have this one of these little handheld lasers, you know, where we're talking about technology 20 years ago.
Have you been staring into it?
Well, no. But I noticed that it's not strong enough to cut off my toes.
That's probably a good thing.
Okay. Well,
do you have one of the green ones?
No, nah, it's a red one.
So, okay. So the green ones are better now. The red ones are like yesterday's technology. You can get red lasers in a box of cereal now.
I'm pretty sure that's where I got. I mean, I think my wife bought this as a toy for a pet. I think that it's supposed to be that convince our dog to chase it.
Yep.
Yeah.
But you can now. You can get some pretty powerful green laser pointers that go for miles.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, every few months I hear about people getting in trouble because they're hanging out by the airport and shining them into the cockpits of landing planes.
Yes.
And by the way, that is a bad idea.
An awful idea.
On all kinds of different levels.
Yeah, aside from leaving a captain blind, crashing a plane, all those things, you're a moron if you're doing that. Well, listen, I'm shining this outside my through my window right now, and I mean, it's painting a target on the tree across the street.
Well, right. So the difference is that the red lasers can go a few hundred yards. The green ones can go like 3 or 4 miles. You know, and then also if you go surf looking on the web, if you're willing to spend a few hundred dollars, you can get some pretty powerful lasers that are capable of actually cutting through some things, you know. And so, and of course, you know, if you're willing to spend more and you're in, it's a little bit harder to get a hold of them, but they're certainly industrial lasers that can do all kinds of crap.
When your Saturn dies, as our tech show for the day, we'll get one of those very powerful lasers, and we'll chop up the Saturn with a laser.
That'd be pretty cool.
We'll make a video of it.
Anyway, we're out of time. In fact, we're way over. So let's say goodbye, and you know, maybe next week we'll talk about some news if there's anything interesting. But like Yvonne said, this is the first time we've done a tech-heavy show in a long, long time. So anyway, this has been Curmudgeon's Corner. Thanks again for listening. As usual, email me, abelsmay@abelsmay.com, with anything you have to say. You know, whatever.
Yeah, whatever. Insult us, yell at us, I don't know.
Tell your friends, have them listen to. We always appreciate that. And that's it. Goodbye, and talk to you all next week.
Bye.